This is CliffCentral.com.
Aubrey Puwe is a South African actor, singer, and dancer. He's probably best known to most of us from his role as Pelo in SABC2 soapy Muvango, and also hosting the SABC1 game show All You Need Is Love.
Yeah. Well, years have moved since then. I don't know why that's not updated. But I'm currently on Isidingo playing Pastor Gabriel.
Sorry, that's
not
right.
Not to worry.
See, my problem is I don't watch very much live TV anymore, but I know how hugely popular this stuff is. I'll talk to you about that in a second, because TV habits have changed.
They have. I mean, I often have a chat with people who work within channel marketing and also our executive producers. Mm. And I say viewership has changed. Your viewers have moved on to, you know, view on demand. People want to watch what they want to watch when they want to watch it.
And do they understand or do they disagree with you?
Well, I suppose the old format is a lot more profitable. I think if you had to put generations on demand, then the SABC wouldn't make the kind of money they make off it being on air. But then also not everybody has the kind of internet access, you know, a few of us have.
Sure.
I mean, I live on Netflix, Hulu, Showmax, and all those things.
But most people don't.
Yeah. So people are stuck within the conventional viewing methods of television.
Well, I do know a lot of other things about you. I know you grew up in Garankuwa.
Yebo.
And Mabuphane.
Yebo.
And that you went to Pro Arte, which I remember when I was at school, the Pro Arte kids were always the fun, wild, weed smoking.
I jumped the weed.
Did you?
Yeah, but purely because I can't roll it. So I'm just a tad lazy.
But there were some pretty freaky kids at Pro Arte, right? And some very talented kids.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
It was definitely, like, Pro Arte was the school in Pretoria.
Yeah.
And it really was a place where all the creatives went.
And
a lot of them ended up being very successful people.
Yes.
And a few of them also ended up being complete losers. But it was an interesting, different sort of environment for kids who wanted to be in acting and singing and dancing and music and all those kinds of things, right?
What I enjoyed about my high schooling is that the environment allowed for individuality to flourish. And there I just learned about people. I think I had three gay roommates throughout high school. I was in boarding school. And at that age already, you could see the diversity in sexual preference and that it starts at an early age even.
So you didn't think it was odd like many of the other people your age might have thought if you bumped into someone and they said that they were, I don't know, into this, that, and the other. And
no.
That stage, you were like this closed-minded.
No, it broadened my, you know, people read books to broaden their horizons. I think being in that environment broadened my worldview.
Did your parents have to make a lot of sacrifices to send you to that school?
I was raised by a single mother for most of my life.
Okay.
She got remarried later, but by then I was halfway through tertiary. But yeah, I think a lot of sacrifices were made because I think she also had to further her studies while I was in school, while I was in boarding school. So, you know, those compromises, not having your child at home or sending them away in order to have the space to, you know, to pursue your dreams in life and also offer them an opportunity in life. Because one thing that education has done for me, and particularly an education in the arts, what it has done is, as Zwai Bala once said to me, it gives you an edge, you know, your ability to be able to read music or to analyze text and define a character, and in fine arts to reference to historic painters or architects. Your ability to do that gives you an edge within that. Sure, people can act, but if I know technically what I'm doing, you know what I mean, then I'm doing what I'm doing with merit and I'm not just winging it.
Yeah, I wonder, there are probably a lot of people who have managed to wing it, and some of them have been very good at that. But it's great to be able to rely on knowledge and to have that huge amount of context that you're talking about now. It kind of puts you in a very powerful position, doesn't it?
Yeah. Funny enough, I was talking to the accountant at work about Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if everyone's it's on everybody's lips.
Oh, my God.
And he said, I don't know about that. Where does it – something must back – your gold reserves back your currency as a country. And I just drew a parallel between – My technique and my knowledge of what I'm doing, you know, which comes from studying the craft. then backs my currency as an actor. Then I can go, I'm bankable. One, I will deliver on,
yes,
on the project, and I will be good for your project because I've got this and that within my arsenal, you know? So yeah, it definitely
did. Did he buy the argument?
Well, I think similarly,
I mean, you could always say that a great painter, you mm-hmm. know, Picasso during his life, and maybe someone like Van Gogh after he died, that these were artists who also, there was nothing underlying that. There was no value attribution to the actual paint or the actual canvas. Their raw materials were worthless. But when they put them all together, suddenly you had paintings that were worth now millions and millions of rands.
I know. Well, he bought the argument. I think we're on the same side of the coin.
Oh, okay, good.
We're on the same side of the Bitcoin, so to speak. But I'm one for merit, you know. And I think in our country, interestingly, over the years, there's been a culture of you don't need. I hope that's you ringing, not me.
Jesus.
Oh. Usually in my industry, they say now you owe us a case of beers.
We were talking about acting and knowing your craft and having an understanding of the history of your craft and the context of it. And I think there are only a few actors who care enough about that stuff. I mean, I saw a Robert De Niro movie the other day.
Yes.
Where he's with Zac Efron in like a grandpa role.
Yes, there's grandpa.
I thought this guy's just cashing in. He's totally given up on being a serious actor. He was very good before, you know, because he's Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
But what the hell's he doing acting in a stupid movie like that? Do you ever think when you take on a project, because it can be very tough. In South Africa, soap operas are a surefire way to get the work, to keep the work, to make the money. Mm-hmm. And if you're good at that, you can make yourself a national celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do all kinds of other things to earn money too, so you build your brand. But soap operas can also be very boring for a really talented actor because you kind of get into this one character and that's all you're doing day in, day out. And I'd imagine for you, because you take it all so seriously, that sometimes you look at it and you go, oh, this character.
Well, one thing I made a conscious choice of when getting on to Istingo. I'd been around the block a bit and I had also traveled abroad and I was also more mature as an actor. So I made the choice to create a very strong character so that irrespective of what the story does, I know I've got a strong offering. That was the first thing I did. Make bold choices, you know. And the constant conversation I have with the writing team, I'm afforded. Fortunately, I work for a soapy where I'm afforded that kind of open door policy where I can walk in and
that's
say.
That's a big deal. Most actors don't get a say in what their script is.
No, but also you got to do it in a respectful manner because in as much as you are very talented at sitting on that side of the mic, you know, your other associates are talented at sitting on the other side of the desk and doing what they do. So you've got to be respectful of their craft and just say, hey man, I'm not seeing it. This is what I'm missing from a story as an actor or just, it's not resonating.
I don't imagine you go in there and you say to people, I'm not doing this. This is bullshit.
Nah.
You'd go in and you'd say, maybe, you know, having played the character for a little while now, maybe his reaction here, can you explain why you decided to make it that? Because I would have thought it would be this.
Yeah. And then because there's that respectful conversation, you know, you're taking on the journey and you're made to understand why. And what I love about the team that we have now, they're frank enough to say, I don't know, man. We were not good on this day, but let's go on with it. It's a good 8 out of 10 for now. And then I think in the next coming weeks, the story improves because I think, you know, I bet you in 365 days, not everybody's firing on all cylinders, even though people are putting in the best feet forward. But sometimes you do have one of those hiccups and you're like, hey man, it's not moving me, but it's moving the story. So I'm just a functionary.
If they were going to kill your character, would they give you advance warning?
Yeah. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes people have gone to the loo and that was the end of that.
No, you're joking.
I'm not kidding.
I'll just fire you.
Yeah, it you know, we've got different types of contracts. I mean, I think as a principal actor at Isdingo, I sit with the privilege within contractually to get 90-day notice of termination of contract.
Okay.
You know, and similarly, I can give them the same.
Yeah.
So if I intend to leave, if Denzel has called me and said, hey, man, I think it's time we do that scene together. Hey, 90 days, I'm out of here.
Sorry, it's Dingo.
Sorry, it's Dingo. Sorry, South Africa. Wish me well. But sometimes you find that other actors, all they need is 14-day notice. And similarly, they have to give 14-day notice if they're call actors. And sometimes you pick it up in the script and you realize that in the 14 days, you will be going to the loo and that will be the end of you.
It's tough, man. Acting is a tough business.
I know.
But it is amazing. Like, let's say the 4 or 5 big soap operas in South Africa carry huge audiences.
Yeah.
They're massively successful. Everybody watches them. The characters are individually known by people.
Mm.
And I know that this is an old trope, but you probably walk around and people call you by your character name. They never call you by your real name.
You embrace that.
And they think that character's real and they ask you about the character instead of yourself and they confuse the two and.
Not quite. I think our viewers have evolved. Soapy viewers have evolved since early democracy days, when the birth of generations, or when it was at its peak in about 98, the late 90s. You know, you had actors being slapped because they're just horrible people.
They were a bad character.
So, viewers have evolved. What I'm appreciating those people. From a very sophisticated individual to a very simple human being saying, I really enjoy your work, what you're putting out there.
That's such a compliment.
I think that for me, that, you know, you can be a household name all you want. I'd rather put the fame aside. I've always endeavored to, for the country to stop and say, you're good at what you do. And that for me, I'll take that and hopefully the money. I'll take that
sure.
to the bank.
But this is also why by these big soaps, I mean, let's say Generations, Isidingo, Muvhango, maybe like a Sievendalane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are probably the 4 big ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's regular work.
Mm-hmm.
It's decent work.
Mm-hmm.
You get to, if you're in your position,
mm-hmm.
you get to, as a principal in the show, decide the ins and outs of some of the parts of your character's trajectory,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is amazing. You probably work with a team you really like,
mm-hmm.
and it's a long-term thing.
Mm.
So you're not in a project, because even movies, you're only in it for like a few months, and then it's over, and then you never see those people again, mostly.
Mm.
But with this, you develop a bit of a family, don't you?
You do. Strangely enough, I mean, I'm working in a soapy where there's a strong sense of family throughout production, the production team, the crew, you know, and cast. In some productions, the talent hate each other. So that's a reality. And sometimes you got to put the work before you, because sometimes the reasons behind the animosity between people are very frivolous. You find that somebody, you know, there's a professional jealousy and you're just not getting on with somebody. But if the work is bigger than you, then, you know, we've got a common goal. So I think where our work, the actors value the work and value the stories that they tell more than they value their egos within the system. I've always lived as an actor, I always lived and worked off the Stanislavski saying that says, love the art within yourself, not yourself within the art. Where
that's quite profound.
I've been in projects where another actor has had a problem with the fact that my suit is shinier than theirs.
Oh, you're kidding.
And they've been in the system longer than I've been. And I would go, well, if you want me to wear your matte-looking one, I'll wear it. But the story will still stay the same. Or if I'm written off high status, then you are. Enjoy playing that. I think people sometimes vicariously end up living, you know, they end up living out their lives vicariously through their characters. So whatever fuels their egos, they'll turn around and say, my character would never do that. What has aided me is to forget myself. If I need to come back, I don't think I'll do half naked, but if I had to come back in a neon orange jumpsuit the one day as opposed to a
You'd look fantastic in a neon orange jumpsuit.
Why? And I embrace it because of that. Yeah.
Okay. 3 quick questions, because this is all on this topic that you mentioned now. First of all, have you ever had a fight with another member? Like not necessarily a physical fight, but a major altercation with another member of the cast on any of these shows or in any production you've been in?
No. Disagreements, yeah. Or you'd find that prior to working with each other, you know, it's, we hate each other's guts or whatever, there's just tension between us.
Because it's a small industry, right?
Exactly.
People all know each other. They all know each other's business.
Exactly.
As you said, professional jealousy creeps in. You know,
yeah. And
stuff happens.
But by the time you have to work together, you bury all of that and let's get on with the work.
Have you ever said, I'm not working with that person?
No.
Has anyone said that about you?
Probably. I haven't. I because I've always believed, you know, such utterances, being in a fortunate position to be asked who you want to work with doesn't mean now you must be petty and venomously stop people from earning an income. There have been instances where I'm asked, and I could tell it's a trick question, if I'm happy working with a certain crew member. And I said, keep them within the system, but they just have to learn about X, Y, Z. That's the only thing that really is a kink between our relationship. Iron that out. Otherwise, a personality is a personality and you take it as it comes, you know?
What about falling in love on set?
Oh,
that
Lord.
Happens. That happens a lot of the time. It happens in movies. It happens. You read about it in Hollywood the whole time, right?
There's nothing sexier than talent, one person says. And obviously, if you spend more time with people, you're very vulnerable and you open yourself up. Let's say you're playing a love interest opposite somebody. Chances are, them opening up to you in the, it takes a lot of maturity to know that I'm opening up with my references to love and warm feelings in my life, not towards you.
Right.
It takes maturity to even interpret that.
Maturity and a sense of being able to create the space.
Yeah.
Because if that person can't sense that there's space between you,
then the lines are blurred, and then, you know, hence people fall for each other when working on projects. In Hollywood, people get married.
Yeah.
At least not here.
Well, have you ever got close?
I've had my brushes with blurring lines. But then again, you do note, you know, in hindsight that I confused the fact that we were open and vulnerable. It was required of us to be open, you know, and warm with each other because our characters needed that. And because we're spending a lot of time together, you know, because that's what the storyline is. You know, you end up blurring those lines. But I think after an incident, I sort of learned, okay. So you can have warm, fuzzy feelings, but you've got to keep your distance as much as possible. You got to detach. You know, in as much as I suppose Al Pacino is method in the acting, but if you have a love scene with somebody, you don't call them and say, I think you should come spend the night.
So we can practice.
Right? No.
You won't get into that.
No.
You don't mess on your own doorstep.
No.
Because I'm sure there are lots of actors who do. I'm not saying you do. I just think with your experience in the industry, you must have seen some stuff going down as well.
Yeah, look, I have, but then again, you know, it requires a lot of restraint because if you have a long journey within the industry, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be the blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy who walks in the room and everybody, instead of respecting you, they go, oh, the old bicycle is here. then it's you're no longer the talent. You're no longer the talented Gareth Cliff.
No, you become the bicycle.
The old BMX is here.
Yeah.
You know, you. So, and I suppose in any
who have you been talking to?
No, I haven't been talking to anybody.
So, what I'm curious about, because you're a serious actor, and I mean the word serious as a compliment. I don't mean you're a boring, heavy-headed, you know, kind of only into maths and science sort of person.
Thank you.
You're a serious actor in that you take the craft very seriously. You consider this a job and a career. It's not something that you're just doing to get famous or any of that stuff, because there are a lot of people who go into acting for those reasons, and they must irritate you a lot.
But finish your question.
Yeah, but theater as opposed to television.
If theater paid us enough in this country, you'd never see me on television.
Knew you'd say that. Now, what is it about theater that draws you? Is it that crowd, the fact that you get the instant gratification from the crowd? Is it that you're able to be on stage, live, one take, can't mess it up. The pressure is extremely high. It's a much more pressurized, difficult, complex environment. What is it?
It's all of that and more. For me, it's my training. So when I was wearing all black in high school and we were moving rostras around, and it's a world I know. You know, being on stage, being part of a Greek chorus, it's part of my training. And I know that world a lot more. I mean, I've had my rounds on TV sets. I've had my rounds on film sets. So I know how to work on those mediums. But theater is my first love because that's where the acting bug bit. It's all that and more. I think the process of creating theater, I've been blessed to work with some of the greatest people in this country. I've been blessed enough to travel outside of this country and actually, you know, play abroad with.
You were in Berlin and a whole lot of other things, right? You've done a number of these, but you've also won awards. I mean, it's worth saying that all the way back in 2002, you got like best performance for a new actor.
Yeah.
And that was one of your first stage performances.
Yeah, I was my first straight play, serious play, was after doing a musical. I did Annie in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So 2001 going into 2002.
What did you do in Annie?
I played the laundryman who sneaks Annie out. I was quite junior then, so I don't think they would have given me.
You would never look at a role like that now.
Well, look.
You chase them out of the room.
Not quite. I know that Al Pacino would walk on stage just to say, "Hark, here cometh the king," and walk off.
You just did that exactly like him.
Here
cometh the king. You just did it just like him.
He'd take a good 3 minutes just saying that. He'd milk it for all it's worth, and you'd remember him more than any other actor on
that
stage.
That's a good point. So actually, you don't care if the role is big or small, if it's something you want to do.
There are no such a thing as small roles. There are small actors.
Ooh.
What are you?
Ooh.
You know what
okay.
I mean?
All right, I see.
That's the saying.
That's
so,
a challenge.
But I think, look, let's not lie. I think ego and your ambitions in life. I've turned down understudy in New York for Mufasa when it was suggested. And I said, I didn't travel this far around. I'm 33. I didn't travel this far around the world to play an understudy. I'm sorry, I appreciate it, but I think I know how the system works. I'll be an understudy and I'll go on now and then. I didn't come this far, so rather let me go home and play what I deserve to be playing. Let me play the roles, you know,
right,
I deserve to be playing.
Is it hard to say no? Because that's often what I think separates the really great actors from the good ones, is that the good ones will say yes to everything. The great ones will say, it's an opportunity I should take, and if I were in any other position, or in any other situation I might have, but I'm going to say no.
I've said no to a Leon Schuster movie.
If that's good. I'm proud of you.
I've said no to a Leon Schuster movie. And there are times when...
Don't get me wrong. I think Leon is great. I think those movies...
He's great at what he does.
Those movies are just... They're a little dated. And they don't really... And I'm not talking about the old ones. I'm talking about the recent ones. I just don't know that they really work anymore in terms of interpreting what's going on in this country. And for you, it would have probably been awkward.
I was at a point in my career where I was very selective and very strategic. Trust you me, I've done projects that have just put money in my pocket. And I walked away. I said, this is my global deal. And they paid me that, and I walked straight away.
Sure.
And, you know, even stage productions.
You have an agent?
Yes, I do.
Manager?
I don't. So my agent sort of doubles up as my manager. In this country, and then it has evolved a bit. You know, you've got people who've got managers, and they manage the brand, and they monetize the brand a bit more. But because I'm primarily focused on my acting.
Yes.
My agent gets the right project, and I'm also a decision maker. I'm a huge decision maker in that there's been a flurry of things that have been sent my way where I went, nope, I'm not touching that. I can't. Or I don't have the time. I'm very focused on this.
Because you would love to obviously do five different things, but you only have a certain amount of time.
We recently just discovered a crisis. I'm... I'm starting rehearsals for Color Purple on the 2nd of January.
Wow.
On the 2nd of January, 2018. But, you know, there's just been a miscommunication with scheduling and I'm required to be on Isidingo shooting at the same time, but I'm exclusively working on the other end, on the other project. We got to find a balancing act of working those things out. If I could, so managing one's time when you've got two projects is very simple, reasonably. It's not like I'm trotting from this appointment to that appointment to this and that to make the money. I'm with one project, which hopefully makes me enough to focus on just that, you know? So, I've been toying around with the idea. I've always liked the idea of, because you do, actors abroad have got a PR manager, they've got, but they make the kind of money to have that kind of team.
Sure, you need to be able to pay all these people.
Yeah, so if I'm going to have a publicist who focuses on me and just only for other people and have a manager who has the same number of people on their books, and I've got to be making buckets of money, and if we're not, unfortunately, this industry doesn't pay us that kind of money.
Yeah, it saddens me in some ways because I feel like we're a country that has such a valuable cultural heritage and such a quality of talent, but so little money is put into the arts.
And
what money is put into the arts is usually just sent into corrupt places where it does nothing for the actual performers, the actors, the singers, the musicians, the people who are adding value to that tapestry. You know, it doesn't go to them.
Look, you just hit the nail on the head as far as funding is concerned. It ends up being that you are funded by state agencies, you're funded by your arts and culture, you're funded by IDC. They're making great strides in putting money to films, into theater projects, and so on. But more could be done. And the one way we can make this industry profitable is if you look at it from a business model. Europe has managed to change the UK, Britain has managed to change their film industry around in that you gotta invest in it. And we can't have quick returns. You know, if you're building an industry, you put in the money as long as you can get that money back or get it back in rebates, whatever. There's a taxation system that can get you your money back.
We should be finding ways around that. That's what the Department of Arts and Culture should be busy with. They should be constantly trying to get all the Nollywood, Hollywood, and Bollywood filmmakers to come and make it here for cheaper.
Exactly. It's why
we won't tax you. We'll give you discounts here and discounts there and all the rest of it, and then you can pay these actors your money and they can star in great productions that are going to go international.
That's the model. That's the model. It exists to some extent, but it's not being explored. I don't understand why a Tokyo Sekgwale, or who's the other mining mogul who owns the
Patrice Motsepe,
you know, doesn't see the value in creating a film studio. Why don't we invest in making sure that we can churn out the action dramas that, you know, Americans tell American stories and they sell that culture to the world. It's a force to be reckoned with, I get that. But then we've got our own narratives which are appealing to the outside world. If we own those stories and if we invested in those stories, then we wouldn't have a situation where you've got an amazing actor, Lawrence Fishburne, but you've got Lawrence Fishburne playing Madiba in a series. You've got three American actors playing very important South African roles. And then you have a Hlomla Dandala and a Siloma Makeka Ncube who are just brushed off to the peripheries of that production playing. And even the amount of script they're afforded is very minimal. I mean, I've had a situation where a scene was written. I was playing a photographer, Magubane, I think it's his. I forgot his name, Magubane, a famous photographer who photographed
Peter
Magubane. I was playing Peter Magubane, and I was with Jennifer Hudson in Winnie, the movie. And I had a scene where she'd just come back from Brantford, and she's overlooking Soweto in the 80s. That scene was script heavy, and I would have had a chance to have a proper scene with her. We shot it, and then there was a second take, which was a very minimized version of that scene, and that's the scene that made the edit. You know, I had Daryl Root tell me, brilliant, I love it. Amazing, my brother. All right, we're just going to go for a shortened version. You know what I mean? Let's hurry along and let's, yeah, the local actors.
Is that why so many actors go to the first screening? Because they're actually never sure what is going to end up
in the film.
And some of them avoid it completely because they don't even want to know.
Yeah, you'd rather wait for the DVD.
Yeah. And is it hard? Is it really hard to see that? Because it sounds like it pains you, and I can understand why. You put your heart and soul into the one version.
Yeah.
And then you do the short version because you know you never have control over what happens in edit. And then when you see it, you're like, oh.
But you also realize that it gives prominence to the other actor more than it gives prominence to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you realize in how it's edited that, okay, I had a very strong scene. The scene was mine. But for some odd reason, the scene is no longer mine. Mm-hmm. I just have these two weird lines so that the star of the movie can continue with their journey. You know? So that saddens me.
You know what? Just stop being so full of yourself. It is called Winnie. It wasn't called Peter Magwane, the story of a photographer.
There's that. I suppose that just shuts and then.
All right, so rent. In this business, what do you think of these people who say open up the industry? Because people like you, and you mentioned Selomage Kangube, you mentioned who else did you say now?
Tlomla Dandala,
Tumi Shomasha.
Yes,
these are the guys. You guys are at the top of your game. You're like the kings of the acting scene in South Africa right now. You really are. And between the four of you, and there are probably a few others that we're not including now, you get a lot of the roles because you're dependable. People know what they're getting. They know that you've got the talent to cover a number of different possibilities, and, and they're going to get what they need out of the likes of you. Does it irritate you then when inexperienced, unsympathetic, perhaps self-absorbed people say, oh, well, this is all about opening up the industry, and why do these guys get all the work? Or do you feel, oh, well, they may have a point?
It's a double-edged sword. excuse me.
Getting like Jacob Zuma when he answers a tough question.
Yes, it's a very difficult one, this. I'll brush through it, though.
Because you know this open the industry.
I know the
hashtag.
It's
a big deal, like 2 years ago. Yeah, it's gone away now.
I understand what opening up the industry means. And from where I was standing, create more variety within the offering so that everybody has the chance to tell their stories. But a Messi is a Messi. Ronaldo is a Ronaldo for a reason, and he remains being the striker of that team for a particular reason.
But also, don't you think these people see you doing the work that you love and that you've reached the top of the industry to be able to do? They don't think about all the hard work that came beforehand.
They
don't see you suffering in the beginning.
There's that. But then also, one thing that's funny about our industry is that anybody with a bit of a personality and a good look can stroll in and go from being a nobody.
Well, that's what people think.
To being
right?
a household name, and it
Isn't
has
that
happened.
Insulting though,
but it has happened.
Isn't that insulting?
But that doesn't guarantee longevity. So the reason why Selomage Kangube is a household name and he's been around, the reason why Ahlomla has been around, the reason why Vusi Kunene and the Tumisha have been around for so many years, is because of knowing what they're doing. I understand what opening up the industry as far as, you know, as far as creating enough variety within the industry is concerned. I understand it from that perspective, and I agree with that as a movement. Stimulate the sector as far as how many stories are being told. Pump more money to creating local production. Stop hiring something that played on BET 1990 or 2003.
Yeah.
You know, stop licensing that and put all that money into local production. Even if it's a 6-part series, create more content for local talent to flourish. But then there's a reason why you are sitting where you're sitting and you've created the kind of name that you've created. You know, there are certain things that you can do in your sleep as far as work is concerned that somebody will struggle to do. So we've got to, and it goes back to meritocracy. In this country, people don't, we've lost, you know, giving credence to the fact that somebody it's the CEO because they have been.
Yeah, but that's the fault of politicians mm-hmm. because those are the least qualified people for the jobs they occupy always. And they always let us down. And it shows. And now they're paying the price because they're starting to see, oh, hang on, I can't just take any job. Have you ever seen a role or been offered something and thought, I'm not ready for that. I don't think that that's for me. I can't do that now. For reasons that maybe you thought that there was more development you had to do with yourself and the character.
Yes.
You did that? That's a very humble move to make.
Last week.
Really?
Last week. So we did a corporate for the Tabor Group last week, Friday. And I was meant to sing the drinking song, La Biamo.
Right.
I'm not an opera singer. I'm a musical theater singer. I've got a bit of range, but the amazing Kutlwano Maswato, who's a conductor and composer, said, yeah, you'll sing that. And I had to call him while rehearsing this in my house and say, in all fairness, I don't have the skill to pull this off, and I'll be embarrassing you. I'd be embarrassing myself.
Wow. That's very humble, because a lot of people would say, oh, of course I can do this.
But that's the problem. Of course you can do this. Do you have the range? A lot of people sometimes go, yeah, Gareth gets all the jobs, but Gareth has to bring in a certain arsenal of skills that you don't possess. So yeah, he's more employed than you, but can you look at what Gareth is doing in finer detail and realize, I don't know anybody else who can pull this off?
I had, Jack Devnarain, who's on
his
Bingo with you.
Yes, yes.
He came in the other day. He's the president of some actors.
Saga.
That's right.
South African Guild of Actors.
Guild of Actors. And he was telling me about the programs that they're involved with in trying to help young actors get ahead and get jobs and all the rest of it. And also to help actors who have been forgotten about by the system and who've been kind of left to their own devices and often are too old to get roles, or they've, you know, been in some way indisposed to continue with the craft. Does it ever occur to you that there's a huge amount that comes into acting that does involve charity, care for others, all of that stuff, without it being patronizing? You know, you don't want to just help people because that's the right thing to do. You want to do it because it makes you feel good as well.
I believe in giving back. I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a firm believer in the each one teach one, you know, slogan. I've worked with younger actors and from different scales. I mean, I'll be working with next year in The Color Purple. I'll be working with a lot of young actors. And when you're working a scene and you've got a bit more experience, you sometimes just go, just clip that. That's too big a pause, and I'll tell you why, so that you impart knowledge.
Right.
You know, that's
yeah.
So you do that in that scale. But
yeah,
I try
a mentor role. Right?
But obviously, you can't assume it when somebody thinks I've got this.
Right.
You can't assume that position. You've got you speak to people who are willing to listen. But annually, I try and give a talk to students that are coming into the industry at the end of the final year. And I went to, it's now TUT, it was Pretoria Technikon then. I try and give a talk to third and fourth years to say, if you're coming into the industry, expect this, you know, prepare yourself, shift paradigm, and.
Because Aubrey, a lot of these young kids who want to become actors, they just see the glamorous life. They see the upside. They never look at the downside.
And then that's what you've got to share. I always believe in accentuate the positive. There's nothing that's, if a young individual who was enthusiastic had to come working for you, even though they've got dreams of grandeur and you can see that in their eyes, but there's enthusiasm about the space and what it is. There's nothing more exciting than seeing somebody excited. And that's one thing I always preach. I say, take your dreams and take your aspirations and go out there and hit the ground running with being prepared to learn. You know, learn as much as you can. I think I learned more in the first 3 months of my being in the industry than I had learned in the years I was in tertiary.
Sure.
So, if
your daughter, you've got a daughter.
Yes.
If she came to you and said, I want to be an actor.
Ooh, she'd be a very interesting one because she's quite shy now. I hope she comes out of that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but she's got a very strong personality. I'd say education. You can be anything. You know, if one had to go to school to being a street sweeper, as opposed to just picking up a broom, I'd say go learn how to be that so that you are the best, or you're amongst the best within that.
Right.
I'd support her because I was supported. I just have to make bucket loads of money because she will go through spells where she doesn't have any, and I'll just have to chip in for the rent and the car and everything else.
What was the poorest stage of your career? How poor were you?
Ooh, you know, Gareth, I've been fortunate. I've been so fortunate. I've had moments where maybe in the production I mismanaged what I was making, assuming that.
But you've never had to live in a friend's house or sell everything you have.
In early days, I moved back home. Uh-huh. You know, I'd be renting somewhere and I'd realize that, okay, I'm not going to afford rent for the next 3 months lease. I got to go. I'm not going to tell my landlord I'm not going to be able to pay you.
Sure.
I've in early days of my career, but I've had just momentous success, and I've been blessed with work. And also versatility ensures longevity. When I wasn't acting, I was able to go MC. Mm. When I wasn't doing either, I managed to produce an industrial theater
and you could sing.
Production, and I've managed to go, you know, be in a corporate and sing, and then that has managed to keep me afloat and keep the lights on. So one thing I always preach to the youngsters, I say, learn as much as you can. So don't think I'm not interested in directing. I'm going to be the greatest actor. I'm not interested in stage managing. I've had to call a show and say, okay, go lights, go this, go, you know. And it's all part of the world within which we work. So if you can understand it all, it puts you in a better position. What if one of these days I become the Peter Turin or the, you know, and I'm producing.
Why would you miss out on that opportunity if you just had to learn a few lessons along the way?
Yep. You just reach up at the end of the process by understanding everything, because if you had to hire people to do something for you, it's better you know what it is they're doing. So that if they're slacking on their job, you can say, I've seen somebody do this job better. You're not on top of it. You know?
What would be your dream musical role and your dream acting role? What do you think about when you're sitting at home and you maybe had a drink on your own and you're looking at some beautiful view, or you're with your family and you're talking about hopes and aspirations and that kind of thing? Do you think of those roles that are just... they're the ones that you really want.
I've had them.
You've had them?
Yeah.
What a thing. What an amazing thing to say before you're even 40.
Yeah. I've played those. Somebody gave me a recording. I saw Dreamgirls, the movie, and I was part of that. I saw Taye Diggs, who I had seen in How Stella Got Her Groove Back. I saw a DVD of Rent, the musical, and I ended up doing Rent, the musical. I toured the States with an all-American cast.
You were Tom Collins in Rent.
Yes, I was Tom Collins in Rent. I played Curtis, the Jamie Foxx role, as everybody refers to it, in the States with an all-American cast. I was the only South African brought in to play a lead and toured the States. I had pinned my hopes on, I've always had this burning to be in The Lion King. And after just a number of auditions, I think I made peace with the fact that I might actually not end up doing it, and I'm fine. Well, I've made peace with it. Actually, this year, I made peace with the fact that actually, I think this is one I let go. Othello, I think. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if you know.
You do a hell of a Othello, hey?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if you know Theo Landy. Theo Landy, an amazing actor who was in class, who was in the same drama school with Idris Elba and Chiwetel Ejiofor in the UK. He's a beautiful South African actor. Oh, extra, he'd kill me. And I've always said, I want to play Othello with him as Iago. Because it's just the quality he has as an actor. So I think, Othello would be one. But I even see myself producing it and saying, I'll produce it so I can play it. Because sometimes...
Yeah, you could do it your way.
You know what I mean? Sometimes...
Is there something you want to mine there that you don't think has been mined properly?
Yeah. I also think...
And would you produce it for theater or for TV?
Theater. Shakespeare's, you don't need to get the rights because it's our heritage as the entire theater world.
The world.
So, but it's about finding the money to pay all the top, because you need people who understand how to, because iambic, which is in how Shakespeare wrote, is not easy. So you need actors who have the skill set to play that, you know, and you look at these young actors and you say, you don't even have the humility.
Go and read some more.
You don't even have the humility to know that you can't just pick up a Shakespeare and just act. You have to have the training and the technique.
Are you friends with Akino Matoso?
Yes.
He's such a talented man, that.
But a visionary.
And such a hard worker, hey. He caught on to this. He's one of those early adopters when it comes to the new way of producing television, film, even theater stuff. In this country, he was ahead of the curve.
Groundbreaking. But what I love about Akino is that he dreamed big and he pursued it. I mean... Tom Pictures, I know the O and the M stood for Omotoso and Matsunyane. Neo Matsunyane, Komutso Matsunyane. I forgot who the T, what the T stood for, who the T was in Tom Pictures. But there were visionaries then, and the kind of television and the kind of movies. He's fearless, which is what I enjoy about him. And then there's also, just there's an intellectual behind there who doesn't just sit and pontificate about things, you know what I mean?
I've had memorable conversations with him. Oh. And Akin he's also a good man.
Mm.
There are a few people that, because a lot of successful people can also be douchebags.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're very self-absorbed. And all the rest. When he talks to you, when you have a conversation with Akin, he really listens.
Oh.
And he thinks about what he's going to say before he says it. He's okay with uncomfortable silences. That's how you know you're talking to someone who's self-actualized.
Yeah, there's a maturity and a wisdom there. I and a generosity as well.
Mm.
You know, I know there have been times when Akin has been called and being asked to do something, and he said, I can't. And they said, who can you think of? And he said, here's this guy, gave them their number. Do you know that 3 months later, I'd bump into him in the morning and said, did you get the gig? Good. I'm glad. As opposed to calling you.
He remembers. He does other people a favor. Gives them a solid.
Without even asking for recognition as a side, he said, hey, I hope they called you because they wanted me and they couldn't get me. And you're like, oh, so you were.
It was him. It was you who passed it on.
And, you know, very selfless. I respect him a lot. And he's also one of those people. I think I had such good role models to look up to. When I was a young actor coming up in the industry, that I'd never wanted to put out bad work because I'm thinking, what would this person think of the work I've put out?
That's pressure.
So you're like, I gotta do good with everything because you know what I mean? I want the greats to look at me and say, hey, boy, you're good.
Yeah. Well, you are. I'm not a great, but I can say that. I mean, it's a pleasure to spend a bit of time with you. Let's catch up again soon because there's always new stuff coming along. There's more stuff to talk about. And Aubrey, I'm sorry it's taken so long for us to sit down and talk.
No. It's been a pleasure. You're such a colossal of a personality.
Oh, please. Really?
That when you came in the door, I'm like, here's the Gareth Cliff. And just to sit down and have a conversation, it was interesting and then quite a pleasure, man. But let's do it again. You do know we're opening Color Purple 31st.
Yes, let's give it a plug. Go on.
31st.
You're not here for your health.
31st January. And we've got an amazing young cast. We've been directed by the amazing Janice Hanneman.
Where is it going to be?
Joburg Theatre.
And is it going to be hugely expensive for people?
It will be affordable.
Okay, good. All right, good. And it starts end of January.
Yeah, 31st January till the 4th of March.
Brilliant.
But you want to come and then experience
it. Get in there early.
Get in there early.
Book your tickets.
Yep.
See Aubrey Bue in The Color Purple. That was the play that was made famous in the movie Oprah was in.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg and Danny Glover. I'm playing the Danny Glover.
Oh.
So I'm the meanie and the journey I have to go through.
All right.
In being a horrible person who turns around at the end of the
day. It's fun to play the bad people sometimes.
Yeah.
Get into the darker parts of your own personality.
Yeah.
Don't get too dark on us. No, all right, Aubrey, thank you, man.
Thank you, guys.
This is CliffCentral.com.